Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, it's David Remnick. A quick bit of news. We're doing something a little different with the podcast. Instead of giving you the same hour-long program that we broadcast on the radio like we used to, we're presenting the podcast in two episodes. You'll get all the same good stuff, but we've rearranged it to make for the best podcast listening experience. Now, if you prefer the old way, you can hear the full hour exactly as we broadcast it at newyorkerradio.org. You can play it right on the homepage with the listen button. Really easy. I'd love to know what you think of the new format, so email me and the radio team at newyorkerradio@wnyc.org. Here we go. Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Palm Beach is on a long, skinny island, a barrier island, about 70 miles up the coast from Miami. It's one of the wealthiest places in the country, a billionaire's paradise with crystal water, pristine sand, and 70-degree temperatures right in the middle of January. And for much of this past winter and spring, Palm Beach was the home of President Donald Trump. A unique aspect of this presidency, among many unique aspects, is the fact that the president owns a private club called Mar-a-Lago. And he lives there much of the time, and he conducts presidential business while mingling with members and dinner guests. And today, we're going in. A couple of months ago, The New Yorker's Lizzie Whitacombe traveled to Palm Beach along with Stephen Valentino from the Radio Hour.
Here comes a Bentley with the driver and passenger filming on their iPhones as they go.
Got a helicopter circling.
They started on this tiny island in the Lake Worth Lagoon, a bird sanctuary that's about as close as the public can get to Mar-a-Lago. That island became a gathering point for protesters and supporters, hoping that the president would just take a little notice of them.
Oh, I guess they're not stopping today.
So has he stopped before?
He has stopped before, several times. And apparently, I wasn't here, but the last time he stopped, he actually got out and called some supporters and brought them over to his home. And they had Secret Service pick them up and bring them there. Amazing, totally amazing.
So was part of you hoping for that today?
We were, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But we understand. He's got another president with him. It's probably much too dangerous to stop. Wow, look at this. Look at this sight. Oh, my God.
So we were down there while Trump was hosting the Chinese president, Xi Jinping. And here's the thing. Although some of the most powerful people in the world live for part of the year in Palm Beach, they're not always thrilled about being the center of the universe every time the president is in town.
Unless you're a member at Mar-a-Lago.
Talk about bikers for Trump. These are the police bikers.
Donald Trump bought the estate in 1985 and eventually turned it into a private club. And it has a unique position in Palm Beach culture. There have been lawsuits and letters to the editor over the club, but it's also been the site of a lot of social and charity functions. And basically everyone in the island has been there at some point. And there seems to be a lot of tension about where exactly it fits in.
We don't really think about class dynamics within the 1%, but Palm Beach is one of these places that preserves the distinction between old guard and new money. And Mar-a-Lago is definitely new money. But if you want to meet the old guard, the Palm Beach Flower Show is the place to be.
Hey, Gazy, how are you?
We met Mary Chapman Webster, the lady to know at the Palm Beach Flower Show, and her husband, Joe, who owns a golf course.
Every year for a flower show, we always do a centerpiece. And last time we did a Volkswagen covered in moss that was sort of regurgitating flowers, which is really quite fabulous. Uh-huh. I'll send you a picture of it.
When you get dressed up for an event in Palm Beach, one thing to keep in mind is you should not be afraid of color.
There's a lot of pastel dresses, silk jackets, and diamond-encrusted brooches.
It looks like a gazebo, and it's covered in beautiful, bright orange lilies. Now I understand why I'm seeing so much orange tonight.
Yes.
Okay. It's all making sense.
Hey, here comes my husband. Come on in.
And y'all are interviewing the lady.
We're interviewing the lady of the hour.
Yeah.
You know what he says every time I win anything? He goes, you know, she never thanks the little people.
And every year at this time, she turns our apartment into a botanical Hiroshima.
Not true.
Wow, a lot of sacrifices have to be made for an event like this.
Anyway,
how would you describe Palm Beach in the age of Trump? Now it's kind of, now it's people are talking about it a lot more. It's kind of become the center of the world. I mean, how would you,
I don't think for the people that live here, it changes, because there's really, you know, a lot of people that are very much under the radar that are here all the time that you're never going to see in the paper or anywhere. And then there are people that love to have their pictures taken, and Trump works for them. And
right.
But I don't think, other than the kind of a two-edged sword, I would say, that, but the burden of him being here is tough on the airports because everybody has to shut down.
And how would you describe the people at this party? Is it the Mar-a-Lago crowd?
Not at all.
How are they different?
Well, I don't. I just. She said,
"Is
this
Palm Beach
the Mar-a-Lago crowd?" I said, "Probably zero."
You want me to be real blunt?
Yeah, tell us.
This is more. No, this is a very old Palm Beach crowd. These are people whose either they or their families have lived here probably for two generations. The Mar-a-Lago crowd is a much more recent to Palm Beach. They are
at that point, she puts her hand over the microphone and says, "It's newer money."
This is old guard.
Right. And so what about, would you say politically, was this kind of a Trump
No, the town, Trump train? Town would be 50-50.
And how would you describe the tenor of the support among the pro-Trump group? Are they passionate Trump train fans?
Well, it was a lot of very powerful, quiet money.
And how does quiet money feel about Trump?
They backed him.
And are they worshipful about his business skills? I mean, are they really impressed by him?
Not worshipful about anything. Most of them are as successful as he is. So, you know, they just wanted the country on a different path.
Yeah.
And Trump's a different path.
Now, you can find a lot of quiet conservative money among the residents of Palm Beach, but you can also find liberals.
Were you at the Garden Flower Show last night?
No, God, no, I didn't. I boycotted.
No, I didn't boycott it.
I had lots of house guests, and I didn't need to.
We connected with Democratic activists Bruce McAllister and Polly Reid poolside.
So Trump and Palm Beach have a long history.
Yes.
And of course, many people in the world are just finding out about Palm Beach now. I mean, you know, it's well known to some people, but yeah. But
it's a funny thing. Palm Beach's attitude towards Donald Trump was formed in many ways many years ago when he was first here and bought Mar-a-Lago and erected a huge flagpole, like the ones you see outside used car lots and on the grounds, in violation of zoning code, and defied the town council to do anything about it. And
among many other things, he was in constant litigation with the town of Palm Beach.
This was one of them.
One of them.
And so they sued and they settled. Donald Trump moved the flagpole back and shortened it, and it just so happens I wrote a letter to the Shiny Sheet, which they published.
The Shiny Sheet is what they call the local paper, the Palm Beach Daily News.
About Please Don't Eat the Daisies. It's a book by,
right,
what's her name?
Well, it was Walter Kerr's wife, wasn't it?
Deborah Kerr?
No, it was Walter Kerr, the columnist's wife, I think, who wrote
Deborah,
it.
Deborah, I think.
No, Deborah Kerr is the movie star.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter who
Dolores
wrote the book.
Maybe.
What's this book? I
anyway,
don't know.
So it's the theme was, what do you do with teenagers? You know, you can't think of every single thing to tell them not to do, because they'll go out. Who would think, don't eat the daisies? I mean, who would think? But that's what they do.
Oh, I got to get this.
So I said, look, it's like... You can't tell Donald Trump to abide by every single rule that he might break, because he'll think of rules to break that you can't imagine. Just realize that we have a giant teenager in our midst, and acclimate yourself to that.
So his antics or actions as president are for you on a continuum with the flagpole and all that?
Yes. I mean, he is a continuum, an erratic one, a volatile one, but a continuum.
Jean Kerr, and she was the wife Jean of Walter Kerr, the
right.
theater critic for right. the Times or the Herald Tribune, maybe yeah. it was back then.
Yeah, right. right.
Can you kind of elaborate about who was he as a character in the imagination of people in Palm Beach? Like, who?
We sort of averted our eyes.
But now you can't ignore him anymore.
Right. No, now you can't ignore him because you can't, you know. The North Bridge has two lanes. The Middle Bridge is crowded forever, and the Southern Bridge is about to be redone and has Mar-a-Lago. So, I mean, you know, you have to choose. I never ever chose when I was leaving this place. Now I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's Thursday, and he's coming tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to go to the vegetable store down on Dixie, because I always go down to the Spanish vegetable store. I can't go down there until I better go down there early this morning, because I will never get back.
And that's probably the biggest impact, traffic.
Pro-Trump or anti-Trump, everyone in Palm Beach can agree on that. The traffic is a bummer.
Traffic is safe to talk about.
Traffic that's and why. Weather.
Yeah.
I walked through the Garden Club thing the other day because I was working all day on the setup. And they're arguing over, talking about the putting burlap on the tables or something they couldn't find. And I'm thinking, I said, 7,000 Syrian children have just been wounded and we're worried about this. And this person said, we just can't worry about all those Syrians. They just don't want it to come up. It just doesn't want it to come up. I mean, I keep thinking of the bigger picture in life. And the bigger picture in life is my little problems are just nothing compared to what is going on in the rest of the world.
So Polly is going around town speaking truth.
Yeah, well, probably, and they don't want to hear it. No, he just says, then I'm just a nutcase, you know.
I wanted to get into Mar-a-Lago, the center of the action. So I got us an invite to a charity event in the Grand Ballroom.
And we were told that President Trump himself was going to show up.
This is not an uncommon thing at Mar-a-Lago. Trump roams the halls and pops in on events. You may remember a few months ago when North Korea tested a missile and Trump dealt with the crisis on the club's dining terrace, surrounded by guests.
Impressive.
So we'd heard a lot about the heightened security when Trump is in town, but getting into Mar-a-Lago wasn't really that difficult. After going through a metal detector and being checked out by the Secret Service to make sure we were on the list, we walked up a very long red carpet that had been laying across a plush putting green.
There's a pool and water features and oversized stone parrots. And, of course, the bulletproof presidential limos were on display.
I'm okay for right now.
Thank you.
Some well-dressed waiters were passing around Mar-a-Lago's beloved lollipop lamb chops with some very bright green jelly.
The first guest we met was Hayden Hosford, a chic blonde in a flapper-style dress with metallic fringe, and her husband, Dr. Herbert Gould, with a plate full of lobster.
Now, Herbert came down from New York.
We were going to speak with you, Herbert.
Okay, well, he is a doctor, and Herbert...
So Herbert is wearing a great pinstripe
Ungaro
suit.
Bought it for him.
She knows exactly what it is. And a very dapper pocket square. And he is very elegant, kind of white.
A horse tie.
A horsey tie.
We're both horsemen.
Hermes. Horse tie.
Hermes, horsey tie. Horse tie.
We're both fox hunters.
We're here.
Fox hunters?
Yeah.
Well, we don't ride anymore because the bones aren't mending so quickly at our age.
Herbert is an ophthalmologist. Hayden is the heiress to a dynamite fortune. They've been coming to Donald Trump's private club for a long time.
How was Mar-a-Lago, what was the reputation of Mar-a-Lago when it became a club versus the other ones? Like, what was it?
I thought it was so elegant and so beautiful. I loved it. There were people, old Palm Beachers that raised eyebrows.
Old Palm Beachers. But you know that crowd, obviously.
But I think it's fantastic. And Trump built this. This ballroom was not part of the original Mar-a-Lago. And I was here opening night. And the chandeliers were supposed to come down and go back up for effect. And they didn't work. And the kitchen, the food was all cold. This was opening night for the first ball here, which I think was leukemia. And we were all excited. And there were some glitches. I loved it anyway.
You were a believer.
I knew that it would get straightened out very quickly because Mr. Trump is a perfectionist. So
the old Palm Beachers who were initially kind of snooty about when he bought Mar-a-Lago and so forth,
some have come around. Some have come around, and some are still raising the eyebrows.
I
don't care. I love it here. I think it's the most elegant place. And I've been to palaces all over. I've had dinner with Princess Anne at Buckingham Palace. I've been in the palace in Monaco. I've been in a lot of palaces. And to me, this is my favorite palace.
Really?
It is the best.
Now, we should point out that Mar-a-Lago does, in fact, look like a palace. This is full Louis XIV repro opulence. Gold is everywhere, in the chairs, in the rococo ceiling, around the mirrors, in the drapes. And even though it's just one ballroom, there are enough crystal chandeliers for three ballrooms. And of course, the marble floors are inlaid with the Trump crest.
So, and what can you say about Mar-a-Lago with Trump as president in the Trump presidential area?
Well, it's a little more difficult to get here. There's a little more security.
It's kind of like the center of the world, though, in some ways.
Nobody expected when he became president that he would consider this, because it's a club, that he would be. This would become the winter White House.
Yeah.
We assumed he would be going to Camp David, and Trump would have none of that. Too rustic for him. He wants his luxury and his gold leaf and his glitz.
So do you know people who are trying to be here on nights when he's around so that they can rub shoulders with the president?
I have thousands of pictures that people have taken with me talking to him at events over the years.
Wow.
And since he's become president, I got the pictures and put them in frames. I told him a long time ago when he first announced he was going to run, I said to him, "You got my vote." And he said, "I better."
I'm sure you've been to all the other clubs. How does the atmosphere here compare to other places?
It's so much better. It's so much better. He likes people that are smart and bright and interesting. You know, some of the old Palm Beach clubs are really obnoxious.
Like, what would the atmosphere be when you walk in there? You feel like people are judging you?
Not name the club, but my girlfriend married a Jewish boy, and they told her, "Don't worry, you can still come to the club, just don't bring your husband."
So
a lot of that goes on in Palm Beach. This club, Trump is not interested in what religion you are. That doesn't matter. He wants you to love golf. He wants you to love luxury. He wants you to have class, intelligence, charm. It's a whole different vetting system.
And be able to pay the fee.
You have to have a little...
That's the weird thing about Mar-a-Lago. It's actually less exclusive and snooty than the other clubs.
Trump is a man of the people as long as the people can cough up $200,000 plus annual dues of $14,000.
That gets you the use of the dining areas, pool, spa, beach club, tennis courts, croquet lawn.
And these days, it also gets you a chance to rub shoulders with the President of the United States.
But we were just at a party in the ballroom, so we hit the buffet table.
So can you just describe what just happened?
A chef in a white chef's hat just expertly pulled a lobster out of a pot and dismembered it and took it all out of the shell. And we got a little pots of hot drawn butter from a silver tank of some kind.
My life will be in your keeping.
This is like clearly a Secret Service guy there. He's got the earpiece. Oh my gosh, look at these ladies. Holy crap.
Can you describe what they're wearing?
I would say it's all kind of variations on Donatella Versace.
Isn't that Donatella Versace?
Is that actually Donatella Versace?
That's either Donatella Versace or a very good impression of Donatella Versace.
Wow. Yeah, you might be right. I'm going to ask her.
It wasn't Donatella Versace.
So it's a nice fancy party, but somewhere in the building, the most powerful man in the free world was attending to affairs of state.
Or maybe he's still in the sauna. We just didn't know.
While we were hoping for him to show, a waiter came around with bottles of Trump wine.
Do you mind if I record you tasting the Trump Chardonnay?
Very good idea. Now, let me, first before I taste, I will give you my credentials. I am the founder of the Physicians Wine Appreciation Society. I'm a grand officier of the Chevalier du Tastevin, which is a Burgundian society. I am a commandeur of the Commanderie de Bordeaux, which is a Bordeaux society. And I have a wine cellar that I've been collecting ever since I got out of my residency in White Plains. So I think I know a little bit about wine. Therefore, I am about to taste Trump's Chardonnay, the great wine grape of Burgundy, actually. The greatest white wines in the world, I think, are Burgundian Chardonnays, and they're also the most expensive. Here we go. Are you waiting? Hold your breath. First, the bouquet. Very pleasant. Very flowery, most acceptable. And now we're gonna look for the taste, and that's much more complicated. Here it goes. Remarkably well balanced.
Do you feel like this Chardonnay reflects the president?
Well, let me taste it again. You put me on another course of this discovery.
So Dr. Herbert Gould reflected on how Trump wine is like Trump the man.
It's a well-made wine. There's thought behind it. It doesn't have much depth, but it has a little excitement. It's very fresh. So it's somewhat superficial in its character, but absolutely delightful in the drinking. Will that do it?
So will you be getting another glass?
If they give it to me, I'll gladly accept. I will not refuse a glass of Trump's Chardonnay. But I think with time, it will improve.
Like any good wine.
And like any good man.
So we're still waiting for Trump. At this point, we get pulled outside to talk to Paulette Cooper Noble, author of the weekly column Pet Set People.
Let me tell you about dogs in Palm Beach. First of all, I have a column called Pet Set People. What I do is I interview the famous, the rich, the high society people in Palm Beach, if they have a dog or a cat. This is a town of little white fluffy dogs and people who dress them and people who say that their dog is an emotional support dog and take them every place, in carriages, in carts. They walk them down Worth Avenue.
Were you are you a member at Mar-a-Lago? But you've been quite a lot.
Oh yes, this year I went to 6 balls. Oh, this is funny. Okay. Let us put it this way. My husband and I are not fans of Donald Trump. I don't know if I should have that in public because it's dangerous.
He is famously not an animal lover, and I think Louis Pope tried to change that.
Yeah, he did, and Paul will give you a comment on that, but I'll just tell you that my favorite protest sign is somebody had a big sign that said, he doesn't even have a dog. And I thought that was wonderful.
It's arranged for a wonderful, wonderful, what kind of a doodle is it? A labradoodle?
Yes.
A beautiful dog named Patton for him. And he turned it down because he just thinks he's too busy and his household's too busy for it. So she kept the dog for herself and she's in love with this labradoodle. His name is Patton and he is a glorious animal.
Remember, honey, we interviewed, you heard about the Trumpettes?
Yeah.
All right. She had a dog named Trump because they're very close. And I did a story on her and I wrote about
about the head of the Trumpettes. Yeah. It was Tony Holt.
And her dog was named Trump.
Right.
So recently I realized that this would be really good for my column. I get a photo of, a dog named Trump and a whole. This is before Lois.
Right.
And it turned out that Trump had died, so.
Trump has died.
So that went my story.
When did he die?
I think she was a year or so ago. She didn't tell me. So there was that story was gone. It would have been so cute.
It was the best column ever.
It would have been a dog named Trump, and I could have been. But I try not to get controversial.
So Donald Trump never dropped by, as he promised the hostess that he would.
But we learned later that he had been a little busy.
We've attacked Syria, you know.
I'm sorry?
We have attacked Syria.
We have?
Yes. Just before dinner, he had his NSC meeting right here, and they attacked Syria. 50 Tomahawk missiles to take out the places where they are suspected chemical weapons.
An NSC meeting in this building?
Right, while this is going on.
And how do you feel about being?
I'm stunned.
Wow. Holy crap.
It's kind of, yeah.
While we were talking about the human cost of war.
He was ordering 50 Tomahawk missiles to strike Syria.
There you are.
Man.
9:42, right?
Do you support that, or how do you feel about it?
No, I don't talk politics.
And there you have it, folks. An evening at Mar-a-Lago, Palm Beach, Florida. That was The New Yorker's Lizzie Widdicombe along with the Radio Hour's Stephen Valentino, and that's it for today. Join us next week for James Taylor and Lucinda Williams, and until then, keep up with us on Twitter at New Yorker Radio, and have a great week.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Alex Barron, Emily Botin, Ave Carrillo, Rhiannon Corby, Jill Duboff, Karen Frillman, David Krasnow, Sarah Nix, Michael Raphael, Michael Lee Rao, and Stephen Valentino, with help from Susan Morrison, Emma Allen, Jessica Henderson, and Eric Malinsky. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.